Hopefully we can get it up on iTunes. Welcome everybody to Hebrew Club, the latest edition restart. Very happy to have you guys here. I really am. We're going to be doing the book of... Hey, how you doing? Come on in. We're going to be doing the book of Amos. Eric thought that would be great since we are doing it for the group Bible studies. And it does give us a really solid prophetic text. Text of it is in good shape, and it's not that difficult, especially in the beginning chapter, so it kind of works out perfectly for us. Plus, you can reinforce it with our Tuesday Bible classes that we have together as well. So basically, how this goes is I read the text in Hebrew, translate it, talk about maybe a few forms, and then if anyone has any questions about anything grammatical or syntactical or even theological, if you'd like to talk about some of that stuff, we can do it. When you have to leave to go to class, please feel free or something else. So I usually keep these at about 20 to 25 minutes, so you can kind of count on that. So when we reach that point, we'll just cut it off and go. And I usually try to get between 10 and 15 verses a day, so we'll kind of have those small segments. That works good for iTunes as well. So I'm going to start in with the first verse. I'm going to read it, translate it, and then go from there. Divrei Amos asher haya va nokdim mitkoa asher chaza al Yisrael bimei Uziyah melech Yehuda u vimei Yarav am ben Yoash melech Yisrael shenatayim lifnei ha-ra'ash. The words of Amos... Now notice how the, who was among the nokdim, whether that's a sheep tender or a herder of some kind. It's an unusual word, and a lot of people have commented about that. From Tekoa. Notice the at-nach under Tekoa helps you divide a Hebrew text into different thoughts. So the at-nach tells you there's one thought, all right? So the words of Amos, who was among the sheep herders from Tekoa, Asher Chaza, which he saw concerning Israel in the days of Uziyah, king of Judah, and in the days of Yarav, son of Yoash, king of Israel. So notice that Amos was a prophet to the north, as you will see the dominant part of his prophecy to the north with a glance to the south. As you go through the minor prophets, that shifts as you go through the, you know, from the 8th century prophets to the 7th century and on. All right, so Amos is one of the earlier prophets, so, early to middle part of the 8th century, okay? Then you have this Shena time, 2 years, okay? So notice the dual form, Shena, from Shana, year, Shena time, 2 years, Lifnei HaRa'ash, before the earthquake, and no one's quite sure. You know, there are some records of an earthquake then, but notice it was a remarkable event that must have helped substantiate Amos's prophecy as genuine. That's what they're saying. Just notice the kind of strange things that the phenomenon of prophecy is described, first of all, as words of Amos, and then Chaza, which he saw. So whether Chaza is to be thought of in visual terms or in both auditory and visual or something like that is very hard to say. But you will see the prophetic experience described as the word of the Lord was to Haya, some, or came to in other places. So it's always fun to look at the first verse of the prophets and compare them across and see how they describe. This one, of course, gives you kind of a nice date. Again, notice the important thing, I suppose, syntactically here are the two relative clauses. So you have to figure out who Asher is referring to or what. So your tense might be the words of Amos, which, and then you're kind of lost if the next word tells you. You have to go back and recalculate and say, the Asher is referring to Amos, not his words. And then the which comes, which he saw after the word Tekoa. And so... it helps you from there. Okay. Any questions about anything grammatically, syntactically? Yes.
Is Chaza, is that always used for a prophetic sort of scene rather than Ra'ah?
Good question. Notice that the noun Chazon comes as vision. Chaza is is predominantly used for the prophetic experience, but not totally exclusively. So you have to be a little careful. And sometimes Ra'ah and Chazah interchange. You know, you'll see them both, okay? So I think it's used probably in a little more specific context than Ra'ah, generally speaking, in the Bible. Yeah. Anything else? All right, verse 2. Vayomar, Adonai mitzion yishag, u'mirushalayim yitain kolo, ve'avlu ne'ot haro'im ve'yavesh rosh ha'karmel. And he said, now notice that this is Amos, all right? Notice that my favorite Hebrew accent, the shalshelet is above it, looks like the little lightning bolt. I like that. So you pause right there. Vayomer, he said. Adonai roars from Zion. The Yishag is a simple call, imperfect, third masculine singular. So Yahweh from Zion roars. And from Jerusalem, Yitain, again from Natan, of course, call imperfect. He gives kolo, he gives his voice. Okay? Now you have the next line, Ve'avlu. Aval normally, I mean almost always, means to mourn. All right, and that's how a lot of translations will take it. But some lexicographers suggest it can also mean to wither, all right, in a few places. So you'll see that debated, and you might see some translations with that. But part of the reason they do it is because of the context. Ne'ot is from naveh, means a habitation, all right, and this is the plural, normal plural. For some reason, the spelling is with an aleph. So the ne'ot, the habitations of the ro'im, shepherds. This is a participle, masculine, plural from ra'ah. Okay, so notice those third hays drop the hay of the root and you add the ending, and it's used as a substantive. So
literally the shepherding guys?
So the guys who shepherd, right. So the habitations of the shepherding guys mourn. Or dry up. Ve'yavesh is a simple call, vav plus call perfect. And the top of ha-karmel, of Carmel, becomes dry. Yavesh. Carmel is, of course, a region known for its fertility and the lush kind of garden life. So here, again, what you want to do syntactically is now ask yourself, what's the relationship between the first line and the second line? So you could do it any number of ways, like temporal. When Yahweh roars from Zion and from Jerusalem gives his voice, then habitations of shepherds mourn and the top of Carmel dries out. You know, talk about the strength of his voice, okay? Or you could kind of do it as kind of just basic facts. Yahweh roars from Zion, one thing, from Jerusalem, he gives his voice. Here's another thing. The habitations of the shepherds mourn, and top of Carmel becomes dry. What Amos is doing in this verse is telling you what's coming. So he kind of summarizes, gives you kind of a heads up about the type of prophecy that's going to happen. He experiences the word of Yahweh that he's going to tell you in a second as this like a lion roaring, and the effect of it has a very physical effect. So the power of the word. And notice it's a destroying word right here. Okay. So again, you will see that when we get to, let's get to verse 3 and then I'll stop and ask for questions. So first Amos speaks and kind of gives his impression, I think. And now you have the more common formula for introducing a prophecy, Ko Amar Adonai, thus says or said Yahweh. And you go into Al Shalsha Pishe Damesek Ve'al Arba'a Lo Ashivenu Al Dusham Ba Charutzot Ha Barzel Et Ha Gilad. So thus says the Lord, over three Pishe Damesek, over three transgressions of Damascus. So notice we're dealing with, so the first place he goes from the north is north, up on the map. So for three transgressions, again, that's a simple construct plural, masculine. And for four, arba'a, lo ashivenu, I will not return it. Anyone see what the root of ashivenu is?
Shuv.
From shuv, good. And notice it is a hifil, imperfect, from shuv. So if shuv means return intransitive, the hifil form becomes transitive. So notice that the suffix on the end, it, I will not return it. Namely, the it probably refers to the punishment or judgment that he's about to announce. Okay? Or you could say, I will not return him. I will not take him away from it. If you want to talk about it's specifically referring back to the city of Damascus. Okay? So on account of Dusham, Dush means to tread or to trample. We have a more common Hebrew word, ramas, which means that. This is an infinitive with a third masculine plural suffix. On account of their trampling, or because they trample, I'm sorry, not trample, thresh, with charut zot of iron, with sledges or plows, with iron plows of iron, et ha gilad, Gilead. Okay, so on account of three transgressions of Damascus, on account of four, I will not return it. And most translations suggest that the it refers to punishment. On account of their threshing with, again, sledges or whatever you call them, plows of iron, Gilead. So because Damascus threshed Gilead, again, notice the metaphorical language that he's using. Yahweh is going to judge them. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. All right. So notice how he's characterizing Yahweh's speech as the roar of a lion from this previous verse. Okay. Questions through verse 3? Yeah, go ahead.
He introduces the prophecy by saying, Ko Amar Yahweh.
Yeah.
How often is it done that way versus Na'um?
Na'um. Yeah. You see those both very frequently. Mm-hmm. And you see them both at the beginning, middle, and end of prophecy to introduce prophetic speech. And they're kind of used interchangeably. I do not think there's a huge semantic difference between those two. There may be some that we just can't figure out, you know. There have been studies done about who uses what and when they occur. This guy by the name of Meyer has a book, Speaking of Speaking, which he kind of looks at those and tries to figure out what Na'um is specifically. It seems to be based on a cognate Akkadian